Hello world, how goes it? How you doing out there? This is Zach and you're listening to Reads on the Bitcoin Well podcast. So I'm staring at my screen this morning and Bitcoin's been trading under 60K, although it's currently just above 60 as I record this, still the lowest it's been since October of 2024. Fear and greed index near bottoming out. And here's the part that gets me, gold just slipped under $4,000. Gold. The thing that's supposed to do well when everyone's scared. You see, when the safe haven asset is also bleeding, that tells you something deeper is going on. Well, what's going on? One man, Kevin Warsh, sat down for his first stretch as Fed chair, looked at the hottest inflation in years, and quietly told the market that the rate cuts everyone had penciled in for 2026. Yeah, about that. Nearly half the committee now says they could support a hike after all. Trump wanted cheap money. He picked Warsh expecting cheap money, and Warsh said no. Now the headlines will scream, Bitcoin is volatile, Bitcoin sold off, Bitcoin is dying. Okay, but that's just the surface story, and the surface story misses the part that actually matters, because nothing forced Warsh's hand. A dozen people sat in a room and just changed their minds and repriced every mortgage, every car loan, every dollar of savings for 330 million people in an afternoon. Today's Reads connects June 17th to Friedrich Hayek, the knowledge problem, and the difference between money run by rules and money run by a person, and why your keys are where that whole argument gets personal. Got thoughts? Send them to z.adair@bitcoinwell.com. That's z.addair@bitcoinwell.com. Without further ado, enjoy the show. One man just repriced every dollar you own. Bitcoin didn't notice. By Zachary Adair. On his first day running the Federal Reserve, Kevin Warsh changed the rules of the game. Bitcoin rules didn't move because nobody can move them. A new Fed chair walked into one meeting, erased a year of expected rate cuts, and rewrote the cost of money for 330 million people. This is the difference between a system run by rules and a system run by a person, and it's the whole reason Bitcoin exists. On June 17th, 2026, Kevin Warsh chaired his first meeting of the Federal Open Market Committee. He had been sworn in as Fed chair after the closest confirmation vote in modern history, replacing Jerome Powell. By the time the meeting was over, the committee's dot plot, the chart where each official pencils in where they think rates are headed, had erased every single rate cut that had been projected for 2026. Not trimmed, erased. The market, which had spent months pricing in cheaper money, suddenly flipped to a 66% probability of another rate hike. Bitcoin fell from around 66,000 at the start of the week to 62,000 by Friday morning. In Canadian dollars, 84,500. The fear and greed index dropped to 14, deep into what they call extreme fear. You see the headlines and you think, macro happened. Bitcoin is a risk asset. It sold off. True enough, but that's the surface story, and the surface story misses the part that actually matters. Nothing happened on June 17th that Kevin Warsh was required to do. There was no formula that spat out remove all 2026 cuts. There was no law, no equation, or binding rule. A group of people sat in a room, talked, and changed their minds about what the price of money should be. One new person at the head of the table shifted the mood and the cost of every mortgage, every car loan, every business expansion, and every dollar of savings in the country moved with him. That's not a criticism of Warsh personally. He may well be right about inflation. He may be the most disciplined central banker of his generation, but that's not the point. The point is the structure. The point is that the value of money in your account is set by the judgment, the temperament, and the politics of a handful of unelected people, and that judgment can reverse in a single afternoon. Think about what you actually hold when you hold dollars. You don't hold a claim on gold. You don't hold a claim on anything. You hold a promise, And the terms of that promise are rewritten on a schedule that you don't control by people that you don't choose, according to reasoning they're not obligated to share with you in advance. When Warsh's committee removed those cuts, they didn't ask you. They didn't need to. And you are a price taker on the most important number in your financial life. This is the thing people miss when they call Bitcoin volatile. Bitcoin's price moves a lot, yes, but its rules never move. The dollar's price feels stable, but its rules move all the time. Ask yourself which kind of volatility actually costs you your sovereignty. Friedrich Hayek won the Nobel Prize in 1974, and most people remember him for warning about central planning in the economy at large. Factories, prices, production, that sort of thing. What gets forgotten is that he spent the last stretch of his life arguing that the most dangerous central planning of all was the planning of money itself. In 1976, he published a slim, radical book called Denationalization of Money. The argument was simple, and at the time, almost unthinkable. Government should not have a monopoly on issuing currency. Not because politicians are evil, although they may be, but because no committee, however smart, can possibly possess the information needed to set the right quote-unquote price for money across an entire economy. Hayek called this the knowledge problem. The relevant knowledge, he argued, is scattered across millions of people and billions of decisions, and it can never be gathered into one room or one model or one dot plot. Now, holding June 17th in mind, think about what that meeting actually was. A dozen officials sat in a room and decided the correct trajectory for the cost of capital across the largest economy on Earth. Hayek's whole point was not that the task was hard, it's that it's impossible. Not because the people are dumb, but because the information required does not exist in any place where it could be acted on. So what fills the gap where the impossible knowledge should be? Well, discretion, judgment, mood, the personality of whoever happens to be holding the gavel. And here's where Warsh did something genuinely remarkable, something the financial press is still chewing on. In his first press conference, he announced the Fed is dropping forward guidance. For more than a decade, forward guidance was the central bank's signature tool, the practice of telling markets in advance roughly where rates were headed, quarters or even years out. It was the Fed publicly pretending it could forecast the cost of money far into the future. Retiring it is not a small housekeeping change. It's the institution conceding the knowledge problem on the record. The Fed is, in effect, admitting it does not know what it will do next month, so it'll stop pretending that it does. Hayek spent 50 years arguing that the planners can't possibly know enough. The new chair just walked up to a microphone and agreed with him. That's the most honest thing a Fed chair has said in a generation, and it should terrify anyone who's been treating the dollar as a stable measuring stick. The people in charge of it just told you that they're flying blind. Hayek had a line late in his life that has aged into prophecy. In a 1984 interview, he said he did not believe we would ever again have good money under government until we take the thing out of the hands of government. And since we cannot take it away by force, all we can do is, quote unquote, introduce something they cannot stop in some sly roundabout way. He died in 1992. 17 years later, an anonymous developer published a 9-page paper describing exactly that. Something they cannot stop, introduced in a sly, roundabout way. Here's the cleanest way to see the divide. There are two ways to run a monetary system. You can run it on rules, where the supply of money follows a fixed, knowable, public schedule that no one can override, or you can run it on discretion, where smart people adjust the supply as they see fit, responding to conditions in real time. The case for discretion is genuinely seductive, and I want to give it its due because of the smart friend move is to steel man the other side. The world is complicated. Shocks happen. Pandemics, wars, banking panics. A strait that closes and reopens, for instance. A rules-based system is rigid, and rigidity in a crisis can be catastrophic. The 1930s are the cautionary tale every central banker carries in their bones, a Fed that did too little, too late, and let the money supply collapse. Discretion exists so that a human can step in and say, this rule was wrong for this moment. That's a real argument. Milton Friedman, who proposed a fixed money growth rule precisely to take this power away from the Fed, was arguing against very serious people who believe flexibility saves economies. But here's the cost nobody puts on the brochure. Discretion is a one-way door. Once you build a system where one person can erase a year of expected policy in an afternoon, you have not bought yourself flexibility. You've bought yourself dependence. Your financial future now rides on the wisdom and restraint of whoever holds the office next. And after that, and so on. You're not trusting a rule, you're trusting a succession of personalities in perpetuity with no exit. The confirmation fight tells you everything. Warsh was confirmed 54-45, the closest and most partisan vote for a Fed chair in U.S. history. Why so bitter? Because everyone understood that the person matters enormously, that the single appointment would move trillions in asset values. We don't have knockdown, drag-out Senate fights over the administrators of fixed rules. We have them over kings. The intensity of the fight is the confession. We all know, on some level, that we're choosing a monetary monarch and merely calling it a chair. There's a delicious irony folded into that fight. Warsh was widely understood to be the White House's pick precisely because he was expected to be accommodating, a chair who would cut rates aggressively and keep money cheap. That expectation is what made the vote so partisan. One side wanted a loyalist, the other feared one, and then he held his first meeting, looked at the data, and did the opposite of what cheap money advocates wanted. He signaled hikes. So even a chair, hand-picked for his expected dovishness, could not simply lower rates into being once the numbers turned against him. That isn't a victory for discretion. It's the moment discretion meets the wall. A monetary monarch can set the mood of a meeting, but he can't vote inflation out of existence. So we're left with the worst of both worlds. A system flexible enough to be captured by politics, yet still bound by an economic reality it pretends to command. You get the volatility of human judgment and the constraints of math with none of the honesty of a fixed rule. Now hold Bitcoin up against that. There will be 21 million Bitcoin. Not about 21 million. Not 21 million unless conditions warrant otherwise. Not 21 million subject to review by the committee. 21 million. New Bitcoin enters the world at a rate that is cut in half roughly every 4 years on a schedule written into the software in 2009 and visible to anyone who wants to read it. Right now, the network issues 3.15 new Bitcoin every 10 minutes or so. In 2028, that halves again. Every node on the network, including one you could run on a laptop in your kitchen, independently checks and enforces these rules. There's no chair. There's no meeting. There's no dot plot. This is not a technical curiosity. It's a philosophical rupture. For the first time in human history, we have money whose supply is governed by a rule that no person, no committee, and no government can change by fiat, which means decree. Hayek's impossible knowledge problem gets solved not by finding smarter planners, but by firing the planners entirely and replacing them with math that anyone can audit. And notice what this does to the relationship between you and your money. When you hold Bitcoin in your own custody with your own keys, no one can dilute it. No one can wake up on Tuesday, sit in a room, and decide that there should be more of it. The total is fixed and the schedule is public. You're not a price taker on the rules. You hold the rules, and so does everyone else equally. That is what the sell-off this week could not touch. The price moved, but the rules did not. A new Fed chair could reprice every dollar on Earth in an afternoon, and he could not change a single line of Bitcoin's monetary policy if he tried for the rest of his life. Neither could the next chair or the one after that. Here's the uncomfortable mirror. If you find yourself anxious about who the next Fed chair will be, about whether they'll be dovish or hawkish, about whether they'll protect your savings or inflate them away, then you've already admitted the problem. You are admitting that your financial security depends on the character of a stranger that you will never meet. Bitcoin is the proposal that you should not have to care who the Fed chair is, that the integrity of your savings should not be a personal question, that money governed by a public rule is more honest than money governed by a private judgment, no matter how wise the judge. But, and this is the part the price charts will never tell you, holding Bitcoin only delivers this if you actually hold it. If your coins sit on an exchange, you simply swapped one set of discretionary custodians for another. You have a new committee deciding what you can do with your money, a new room that you're not in. The whole point of a rules-based money is hollow if you hand the keys to someone who runs on discretion. This is why self-custody isn't a feature, it's the entire argument made personal. Hayek wanted to take money out of the hands of government. Self-custody is you taking your money out of everyone's hands but your own. The rule protects the supply, and your keys protect your stake in it. Not your keys, not your coins. And in a week like this one, when one man's first day on the job rewrote the price of money for everyone who trusts the dollar, the deeper version of that line writes itself. Not your rules, not your money. Kevin Warsh changed the rules of the dollar on June 17th, but he can't change the rules of Bitcoin. Neither can anyone else. If you've decided you'd rather hold money whose rules no one can rewrite, Bitcoin Well exists to help you buy it and move it straight into your own custody, where the only person with discretion over your savings is you.